Hi, Dave Emery here, side two of For the Record program number 822, the Snowdenistas, the GOP, and violent secession. This is being recorded on November 23rd of the year 2014. I'm going to plunge right back in where we left off at the end of side one. Again, the point of this program is the continuity, the ideological and operational continuity between, on the one hand, the Snowdenistas, as I call them, the backers of Eddie the Friendly Spook Snowden, the Peach Fuzz Fascist and WikiLeaks, and the GOP, and the violent, racist, neo-Confederate, secessionist paramilitary elements that are cropping up to an increasing degree. Front and center in this program is going to be the controversy over, quote, immigration, unquote. On the My San Antonio blog of October 29th of 2014, Joshua Fechter, F-E-C-H-T-E-R, had an interesting observation. Records. Border militia member had ammonium nitrate and thousands of rounds of ammunition in a hotel room. This reads in part. Federal agents found a box filled with what appeared to be ammonium nitrate, which can cause major explosions, along with firearms and thousands of rounds of ammunition during a search of the hotel room of militia member Kevin Lindell Massey, M-A-S-S-E-Y. Agents with the Federal Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, who searched Massey's hotel room in Brownsville after an October 20th arrest, found an AK-47 with six loaded magazines, a loaded handgun, a ballistic helmet and several cameras, as well as the ammunition box filled with suspected ammonium nitrate and fuel, according to court documents obtained by the San Antonio Express News. Ammonium nitrate can be a powerful explosive under certain circumstances. A stockpile of the substance at a fertilizer plant in West Texas caused the deadly April 17th explosion that killed 15 people and injured more than 160 others. It's also the substance used by Timothy McVeigh in the 1995 Oklahoma City bombing that killed 168 people. Massey was arrested in connection to an August 29th incident during which a border patrol agent fired four shots at a man pointing a weapon at the agent near the Rio Grande while pursuing a group of immigrants east of Brownsville, according to documents from the U.S. District Court for the Southern District of Texas in Brownsville. So note again that a member of this border militia to guard against, quote, illegal aliens, unquote, was stockpiling ammonium nitrate. That was used by Timothy McVeigh and company in the Turner Diaries-inspired Oklahoma City bombing. And Timothy McVeigh is a hero to Andrew Auernheimer, a.k.a. Weave, someone who was in the good graces of Glenn Greenwald. By the way, even before Auernheimer got out of jail espousing neo-Nazi views, he was an apple, so to speak, of Glenn Greenwald's eye, as well as focal point of other civil libertarians who have been active on his behalf. Among the people who have been very chummy with people like Kevin Lindell Massey, who was stockpiling ammonium nitrate, is a fellow named Greg Abbott, A-B-B-O-T-T. That is a name that you may not be familiar with. You should be familiar with it. He is now governor of Texas. When he was the Texas Attorney General, he was very supportive of these elements and refused to condemn them. Information about that in the Think Progress blog of August 8th of 2014, an article by Ian Millhiser, M-I-L-L-H-I-S-E-R, armed right-wing militias amassing along Texas border with state lawmakers' blessing. And skipping down in this article, we read, late last month, the 12 Democratic members of Texas congressional delegation penned a letter to Greg Abbott, the state's attorney general, and the Republican candidate to be Texas' next governor. Parenthetically, he is now the governor-elect of Texas. In it, the 12 lawmakers quote a militia leader who said that, quote, you see an illegal, you point your gun dead at him right between the eyes, and you say, get back across the border or you will be shot, unquote. They also ask Abbott to, quote, denounce the actions of these militia groups and clarify the jurisdiction these militia groups have to patrol alongside law enforcement and Border Patrol agents, unquote. A spokesperson for Abbott dismissed the letter as a partisan political stunt, unquote. The militias Abbott would not denounce include a volatile mixture of paranoid anti-government groups and potentially violent gun activists, skipping down. Last April, a similar collection of militia organizations, including members of the Oath Keepers, gathered near the home of Nevada rancher Cleveland Bundy to offer armed resistance to federal officials seeking to enforce a court order preventing Bundy from illegally grazing his cattle on federal land, skipping down. What sets Bundy's armed supporters apart from the militia members gathering in Texas, however, is that Bundy's militia squared off against trained federal law enforcement officials. The militiamen in Texas, by contrast, have threatened to point their guns at desperate and often helpless people across who are crossing the border. I would also point out that Glenn Greenwald's pal, Andrew Auernheimer, also idolizes the Cleveland Bundy supporters, as well as Timothy McVeigh. Skipping down, in another article, rather, I should say, this also is from the San Antonio Express. This also is from Joshua Fechter, F-E-C-H-T-E-R. This from October 31st of 2014. Militia leader posed with Greg Abbott 4 days before feds found ammonium nitrate and weapons at hotel. It reads in part, skipping down. 4 days before federal authorities arrested him on federal charges and found ammonium nitrate in his South Texas hotel room, Border Militia leader Kevin Lindell, K.C. Massey, chatted and posed for a photo with Republican gubernatorial candidate Greg Abbott at a campaign event in Brownsville. The photo, taken at Brownsville restaurant Cobbleheads on October 16th, shows Massey wearing an Abbott for Governor sticker on his military fatigues and shaking hands with the smiling candidate. Video footage captured by Fox 2 News in Brownsville also shows Massey taking photos of Abbott while wearing a GoPro camera on his head, which was later confiscated during the raid. And skipping down still further, Abbott's opponent, Greg Abbott was the state attorney general at the time. He is now governor-elect of Texas. Abbott's opponent, Democratic gubernatorial candidate Wendy Davis, blasted Abbott in a statement for not condemning militia groups' activity at the U.S.-Mexico border. It's hard to say what's more disturbing, the fact that Greg Abbott met with a radical militia leader days before federal authorities found the same kind of explosives as were used in the Oklahoma City bombing in his hotel room, or the fact that Greg Abbott is refusing to denounce his dangerous fringe group, Davis said, again quoting, Mr. Abbott's refusal to disclose what they discussed or condemn this group shows a frightening lack of judgment from someone who wants to be our governor. And it's interesting to see this. These are elected GOP officials, and yet our media are trying to portray the types of people who are the border militia types and the Oath Keepers and others as violent right-wing extremists, and yet somehow the GOP is a legitimate organization. In fact, the distinction is largely artificial, and in turn, one of the major points I have been making is that when you dolly the camera to the right from Eddie the Friendly Spook and his ilk, you find exactly the same elements. You find the Ku Klux Klan, David Duke, the neo-Confederate movement, people who think the South was right, and so forth. Julian Assange is a big backer of the Palestinian Libertarian Organization as well. And in the wake of Obama's executive order on immigration, I think we can see the rhetoric accelerate accordingly. USA Today of November 20th of 2014 had an article by Susan Page, P-A-G-E. GOP senator warns of violence after immigration order. It reads in part as follows. Oklahoma Senator Tom Coburn warns that there could not only be a political firestorm, but acts of civil disobedience and even violence in reaction to President Obama's executive order on immigration Thursday. The country's going to go nuts because they're going to see it as a move outside the authority of the president, and it's going to be a very serious situation, unquote, Coburn said on Capitol Download. You're going to see, hopefully not, but you could see instances of anarchy. You could see violence, unquote. Continuing, skipping down. On immigration, Coburn accuses Obama of acting like an autocratic leader that's going to disregard what the Constitution says and make law anyway, unquote. He says changes in immigration policy require passage by Congress, not just the president's signature, a charge the White House disputes and on which legal experts disagree. Instead of having the rule of law handling in our country today, we're now starting to have the rule of rulers, and that's the total antithesis of what this country was founded on, Coburn says. Here's how the people think. Well, if this law doesn't apply to the president, then why should it apply to me? Unquote. A statement, by the way, very close to sedition. Presidents have issued all sorts of executive orders, and we haven't seen this sort of brouhaha unless it happens to be a Democrat, skipping down. One of the races that the Republicans won was in Iowa, and a woman named Joni, J-O-N-I, Ernst, E-R-N-S-T, was elected, and she too is a creature of the far right. Yahoo News of August 13th of 2014 had a post by Meredith Shiner, S-H-I-N-E-R, talking about Joni Ernst and her endorsement of something called Agenda 21. That was actually a UN resolution backed by all sorts of elements. Specifically, the John Birch Society has hit upon Agenda 21 as some sort of one-world government, based on the Illuminati and the space aliens and what have you. It is being portrayed as some sort of totalitarian one-world government edict, again, pretty much in keeping with the ideology of the John Birch Society. By the way, a good piece of background on the John Birch Society, AFA program number 11 about the evolution of American fascism. Of Joni Ernst, we read, in the weeks since her decisive June U.S. Senate primary win in Iowa, Republican Joni Ernst has found herself in the precarious position of being an establishment-backed candidate who owes her shot at a national office to some of the most conservative voters in the country. That means that while she's now got the full support of the National Republican Senatorial Committee, she's also being confronted by sympathetic remarks she made earlier on fringe topics before audiences far to the right of the Iowa general electorate. The latest primary comments that could haunt her Senate bid are on the topic of Agenda 21, a community planning provision in a decades-old UN treaty that's become an object of fear and conspiracy theories on the far right, especially in the commentaries and writings of Glenn Beck, skipping down. It wasn't the only time Ernst addressed the topic or raised such fears during her primary campaign. Quote, what I've seen, the implications we could have here is moving people off their agricultural land and consolidating them into city centers and then telling them that you don't have property rights anymore, unquote, she told a crowd in rural Ida Grove in November of 2013 in response to a general foreign policy question and in remarks first reported by the AP in June, skipping down. Ernst has expressed out-of-the-mainstream views on a range of issues from impeaching President Barack Obama to the issue of states acting to nullify federal law, for which she was criticized by the editorial board of the Des Moines Register. By the way, in For the Record 771, we went into the links between the nullification movement and the Snowdenistas and how they are part and parcel to a fascist milieu in this country. Again, For the Record, 771. Skipping down again about Joni Ernst. And unlike her impeachment remarks, the breadth and length of her response on the topic of Agenda 21 seems to belie a deep knowledge of the conspiracy theory floated by conservative radio icons on an issue on which many candidates would likely have no prepared talking points or strongly held opinions. Many sources familiar with Iowa politics note, however, that the question of Agenda 21 is more frequently discussed in the Hawkeye state's agricultural communities than it is nationally. and more about Joni Ernst. She responded positively to a poll that was taken, by the way, by associates of Ron Paul and his campaign for liberty. Again, Ron Paul was Eddie Snowden's political candidate of choice. Snowden contributed to Ron Paul's campaign. And the top legal advisor to Ron Paul's campaign was the first attorney for Edward Snowden and the attorney for the Snowden family, having been introduced, by the way, to the Snowdens by none other than Rand Paul, Ron Paul's son, who was part and parcel to these same elements. And Rand Paul is now the political choice for president of none other than Ralph Nader, who's now graduated from helping to elect George W. Bush, which he did in 2000, to now touting the Tea Party. And again, Rand Paul, a darling of the Tea Party, and supported by Ralph Nader, that is to say, when networking with Ralph Nader, when Rand Paul isn't putting in FaceTime with the Koch brothers, Rupert Murdoch, the Tea Party, or what have you. More about Joni Ernst. Now, again, she has gone on record as positively, feeling positively about being about the notion that if a federal official, a federal law enforcement official, is attempting to implement the Affordable Care Act, they should be arrested, which is quite remarkable. From the Talking Points memo, Livewire, of October 3rd of 2014, an article by Daniel Strauss, Strauss, exclusive, GOP-er Ernst backed arresting feds over Obamacare in the 2012 survey. This reads in part, State Senator Joni Ernst, the Republican nominee for U.S. Senate in Iowa, once said she would support legislation that would allow local law enforcement to arrest federal officials attempting to implement Obamacare, unquote. Ernst voiced her support for that, as well as supporting legislation that would nullify Obamacare in an Iowa state legislative candidate's survey for Ron Paul's Libertarian-aligned Campaign for Liberty in 2012. There's a link where you can view it. The question was, quote, will you support legislation to nullify Obamacare and authorize state and local law enforcement to arrest federal officials attempting to implement the unconstitutional health care scheme known as Obamacare, unquote. Ernst answered that question as, quote, yes, unquote. Parenthetically, there's nothing unconstitutional about Obamacare. And a lot of the people who are running around bloviating about it are basically the type of people who've been seen at demonstrations saying, keep your government hands off of my Social Security and Medicare. Again, people who are sincere, which is kind of scary, and so profoundly ignorant that they are unaware that Social Security and Medicare are government programs, fiercely opposed by the very people whose political bidding they are doing. It's also interesting to see Greg Abbott, the governor-elect of Texas, supporting people who are basically appear to be flirting with the political methodology of Timothy McVeigh and people worried about immigration. We're going to talk about secession here in just a second. Oops. It reminds me of a few years ago, the ignorance of these people. A few years ago, there was a poll taken in Dallas, Texas, and something like 43% of high school seniors in Dallas, Texas, could not name the country that bordered the United States to the south. I mentioned that to a friend of mine, and he said, hey, that's easy. The country that borders the United States to the south is Texas, which is actually a better answer than one might think. Of course, he was kidding. However, there's that old expression, a joke is the epigram on the death of a feeling, coined by Nietzsche. Listen to the following. This is from Law Story of October 22nd of 2014. It's by Travis, T-R-A-V-I-S, Getty's, capital G-E-T-T-Y-S. Author says South should form new nation without gays or Hispanics called Reagan, unquote. It reads in part, A conservative columnist and former aide to President Ronald Reagan called on southern states to secede and form an ultra-conservative new nation named after his old boss. Douglas McKinnon, capital M-A-C, capital K-I-N-N-O-N, a former speechwriter for Presidents Reagan and George H.W. Bush, appeared Tuesday on the Janet Mefford Show to promote his new book, quote, The Secessionist States of America, The Blueprint for Creating a Traditional Values Country Now, reported Right Wing Watch. He told the religious conservative host that southern states, starting with Florida, Georgia, and South Carolina, should leave the U.S. so they can implement a right-wing Christian system of government. McKinnon envisions other states joining, but he hopes to leave out Texas because, quote, there have been a number of incursions into Texas and other places from some of the folks in Mexico, unquote. Still quoting. A growing number of our leaders seem determined to erase our borders, he wrote in a recently syndicated column promoting his book. Do away with the rule of law, expand the nanny state into a theology, bankrupt or punish American companies in the name of fighting climate change, do away with the Second Amendment, censor or demonize the history of Western culture, and replace it with multiculturalism, give every kid a trophy and turn them into wimps, continue to support the completely unfunded public employee pensions, which are destroying the solvency, the financial solvency of cities, counties, and states across our nation, add billions every day to our $17 trillion in debt, destroy our health care system to substitute socialized medicine, vilify fossil fuels, and attack all faith in God with a particular and unhinged bias against the Christian faith. He argued on the radio program that the South had seceded legally, unquote, and peacefully, unquote, in the months prior to the Civil War. President Lincoln waged an illegal war that was, in fact, not declared against the South after the South basically did what we're talking about in this book now in terms of peacefully, legally, and constitutionally leaving the Union, unquote, McKinnon said. Skipping down. He said the new country should be called Reagan, at least until voters there could decide on the permanent name. McKinnon did not specifically address during the radio program whether slavery would be legal in the new secessionist government, nor did he describe the status of black people living in Reagan. But he made clear that LGBT people would be second-class citizens or worse, saying that advances in their rights as citizens was a major factor in his call to break up the U.S. And again, in For the Record 756, we went into in great detail the profound links between the Snowden milieu, the neo-Confederate milieu, the secessionists, and the Ludwig von Mises Institute. Again, For the Record 756 goes into that at great length. The recent elections have elevated Mitch McConnell to the Senate Majority Leader, and an interesting detail was ignored by those who voted for them. This is from the Addicting Info blog of October 31st of 2014. It's an article by Nathaniel Downs, and it talks about a bust of 40 kilograms of cocaine that were found on a ship that is owned by the company of Mitch McConnell's father-in-law. This is interesting because it is McConnell's in-laws who basically have provided most of McConnell's fortune. And one wonders, I think, reading this about where perhaps some of McConnell's in-laws' money may have come from. One of the questions I think that suggests itself is perhaps is the McConnell in-law family's wealth, which apparently is the source of his own largesse, derived in part from the trafficking of contraband such as cocaine. The title of this article, again, from Addicting Info of October 31st of 2014, 40 kilograms of cocaine found on Mitch McConnell's father-in-law's boat. James Chao, C-H-A-O, father of Mitch McConnell's wife, Elaine, has a lot of questions to answer after 40 kilograms of cocaine, about $6.7 million worth, was found on the Ping May, P-I-N-G-M-A-Y, a ship owned by the foremost group a company James Chao founded and led to a tidy fortune. But was that fortune built on honest movement of legitimate bulk trade goods, or has Mr. Chao been trading in less than legal goods? The cocaine, found in 40 separate packages, was discovered during a routine inspection hidden among a load of coal bound for Europe from the port of Santa Marta, Colombia, on board the Ping Mai, or May, one of 15 ships Foremost currently operates, with another 8 under construction. The final destination for the ship was to be the Netherlands, likely one of the port cities surrounding Amsterdam. It is known that the Ping Mai has been witnessed at the port of Zaanstad, Zaanstad, one of these cities in the past. Foremost Group is the source of most of Senator McConnell's fortune through gifts and inheritance from his in-laws. It is a shadowy corporation utilizing a complex scheme of shell companies to skip out on millions in taxes annually. So again, where does Mitch McConnell's largesse come from? It comes from his in-laws. Where does their largesse come from? A very ironic element. After September 11th, one of the worst of the scaremongers of the GOP was then Attorney General John Ashcroft. And he is now in private practice, and his law firm is now going to be representing Viktor Bout, B-O-U-T, the Russian-born arms dealer who was trafficking weapons to, among others, Al-Qaeda. From Reuters.com of November 3rd of 2014, the following article by Jonathan Stempel, capital S-T-E-N-P-E-L. Arms dealer Bout, again B-O-U-T, seeks new U.S. trial, hires Ashcroft Law Firm. Reads in part, convicted Russian arms trafficker Viktor Bout believes he has evidence to justify a new U.S. trial and has hired the law firm of former U.S. Attorney General John Ashcroft to help him pursue his case. Bout, 47, is serving a 25-year prison sentence following his 2011 jury conviction for having conspired to kill U.S. soldiers by way of his agreement to sell weapons to a Colombia rebel group. According to filings on Monday with the U.S. District Court in Manhattan, Bout hired the Ashcroft Law Firm and Alexei Tarasov, T-A-R-A-S-O-V, a Houston-based lawyer, to help him obtain a new trial based on unspecified, newly discovered evidence, unquote. And skipping down, it is so interesting to see the GOP screaming about this and that and the illegal uses of money for this and that. The 7th GOP-initiated investigation of Benghazi has just concluded. It is now being superseded by an 8th GOP congressional investigation of Benghazi. The 7th of those investigations basically cleared the Obama administration and the State Department of all charges. From Talking Points Memo of November 21st of 2014, an article by Ken Delanian of the Associated Press, D-I-L-A-N-I-A-N, GOP intel report debunks its own party's nutty Benghazi theories, reads in part, skipping down. Debunking a series of persistent allegations hinting at dark conspiracies, the investigation determined that there was no intelligence failure, no delay in sending a CIA rescue team, no missed opportunity for military rescue, and no evidence the CIA was covertly shipping arms from Libya to Syria, skipping down. The House Intelligence Committee report was released with little fanfare on Friday before Thanksgiving week. Many of its findings echo those of 6 previous investigations by various congressional committees and the State Department panel. The 8th Benghazi investigation is being carried out by a House Select Committee appointed in May. Well, who knows? Maybe the 8th time will be the charm. This concludes Side 2 of For the Record program number 822. The Snowdenistas, the GOP, and violent secession. This has been recorded on November 23rd of the year 2014. I'm Dave Emery. Ciao.